Welcome to another episode of the Gonzo Chronicles. This is your host, Cyrus Alderwood. And today, actually, I've been excited about this particular interview for a while, and I've teased it on the show. But for the fans out there, Friday the 13th, and everyone knows how big of a fan I am of that franchise, today we have from Friday the 13th, Part 5, A New Beginning, Deborah Voorhees. How you doing, Deborah?
I'm terrific. Thank you so much for having me on.
Now, in October, horror fans are in for a really, really big treat. You've had a project you've been working on called 13 Fanboy. Can you tell us a little bit about that and what fans of this franchise can expect out of this movie?
Absolutely. First, I'm Deborah Voorhees. Most of you guys will know me from Friday the 13th, Part 5. I played the role of Tina. Well, I'm also a filmmaker. Aside from that, I may work outside of the camera as a director. And as I got to know my fans, I began to realize that there's a film that they've been all asking for and wanting, and they wanted something that brought back some of their favorite characters. So this is about an obsessed fan that is stalking his favorite actors from Friday the 13th and also from Halloween. We have the fabulous, amazing Dee Wallace from Halloween. And, of course, you guys know her from E.T., The Howling, Cujo, a zillion movies. She's an absolute brilliant actress. I've got two of your favorite Jasons in it. We have C.J. Graham and we have Kane Hodder. We have, we have Judy Aronson from Part 3. Part 4. We have Tracy Savage from Part 3, myself from Part 5. I'm not only in it, but I am the director of it, the powerhouse behind it, the co-producer and co-writer on the project. We have Ron Sloan. He actually is playing Dee Wallace's husband in it. We have Laura Park Lincoln from 7 and Jennifer Banco from Part 7. And whom am I missing? Probably missing somebody here. I'll think of it here in a minute if I have. Go ahead.
Was Adrienne King? Was she in this as well?
No, she is not in it. We approached her and she was planning on being a part of it. But after reading the script, she had a stalker herself.
Ooh.
And it was too uncomfortable of a situation for her. So we totally understand. And we bless her and wish her the best. And maybe we'll do something with her later at another time on a different project.
Wow, I had no idea about that. I was going to ask, you know, where did you develop the idea? And you know, just kind of going back and just off the top of my head, did many of the other actors or actresses ever have something similar happen with stalkers?
Actually, we had three that I'm aware of from the series. One was Adrienne King, as I just said. Laura Park Lincoln, who's also in the film, she was our final girl from Friday the 13th, Part 7. And she had a stalker for 6.5 years.
Oh, wow.
And then Judy Aronson from Part 4, she had a stalker as well. Now, it wasn't Friday the 13th related, but it was actually for some work that she had done for Aaron Spelling in the past. Both of them decided to go ahead and go for it and be a part of it. And that's wonderful. I didn't actually know from the beginning how many people had stalkers. It was more of kind of like a fantasy thing. How it came about was my producing partner, his name is Joel Paul Reise. And he just asked me, he said, "What is it like at horror conventions?" He said, "Is it ever scary?" And I'm like, "No, not at all." I said, horror fans are really, you have to kind of think of them as a bunch of kids, grown-up kids who like to play dress-up and for Halloween kind of thing.
Yeah.
We're not talking about anything scary here. We're talking about people who love special effects, practical effects, this sort of thing.
Yeah.
And I say that with the utmost kindness, is that I love that about them. I love that they, you know, horror fans so embrace playing, because that's all that it is on a film set. We're all make-believe. We're playing in a sand pile, pretending that we're somebody else. And, but he says, well, has anything ever happened? That was kind of scary. And so, well, you know, there's been a couple of instances that kind of were cause for pause for me. And I said, one of the incidents was that I had somebody message me on Facebook that said, wouldn't it be cool if you died in real life like you did in Friday the 13th?
No way.
Yeah, and we all know how I died, and no, I'm thinking old age, asleep, you know, not wake up, very peaceful, kind of a
situation. Yeah.
And so that was a little chilling to me, but I blocked the person, and I never had anything after that. So I don't think that the person was really, like, necessarily a bad person, but didn't quite think through how that might be received by somebody from the series.
Yeah, no doubt.
Oh, and but the person didn't bother me after that, to the best of my knowledge. So it was probably a little bit of a joke. The second one was a little bit, it bothered me a little bit more, because it actually came to my personal cell phone. And I was sitting in my office, and right in front of me were two double doors with, you know, that were just, they weren't covered or anything. And they just, you know, look out onto the darkness, because it was very late at night. And I live in, you know, in the mountains. And I get a text message, and then I get a series of messages. And they basically all come out saying that the guy is pretending to be Jason, or the person, I'm assuming it's a guy, is pretending to be Jason, and says he is watching me, and basically that he's coming for me. And I immediately blocked that person, and nothing else came of it, but that was very unnerving. Because particularly where I was sitting at that moment, that person could have easily been watching me. Because you know how it is at night when you have your light on?
Oh, yeah. Just
light on at the desk. They could have easily seen in.
Yeah, and you can't see out.
Right, yeah. Exactly. So that definitely unnerved me. But once again, I blocked the person and nothing else happened other than that one incident. So either the person, you know, it could have been many things. It could have been a fan playing a joke. It, and they probably just thought they were being funny, but of course to me it was not funny. It could have been even a friend of mine playing a joke on me and then never wanted to own up on it and say, of course, I don't think it was the latter, because it didn't come up on my phone who it was.
Yeah.
So I just immediately blocked him, and that was it. And then Joel was like, that's our movie. And I was going, I mean, literally chills went up my neck. And I was like, no. No. That's really scary, like, real life shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I was thinking more of, you know, some totally fictional, not out of, in the realm of possibility kind of thing that you're getting on this. And so it took me about 5 days to really think it through. And then I was just like, yep.
That's almost too scary not to run with.
Right, exactly. Yeah. That's pretty much what I decided. That it was too scary not to do it.
Now, once you decided to do this and you approached some of the former cast of the franchise, what were their reactions? Were they pretty excited about this? Were they eager to jump back in?
I would say most of them, yes. A handful, it really brought up a lot of fear. And I have to admit, for me initially, you know, when I was still trying to decide, I did feel that myself, so I could really identify with them on how they felt. It's one thing to play a character in a film whereas everything is completely fictional. But I was asking them to play themselves.
Yeah.
Be it a somewhat fictionalized version. So, like, the events and things that happen are fictionalized. And but I tried in each of their roles is to add something that was pertinent to that individual. So, for example, Dee Wallace is my lead. And she is this very kind, loving, gentle woman. And so in the film, she is playing herself as Dee Wallace being stalked from because she was a part of the Halloween series. I play Deborah Voorhees, who's being stalked as part of the Friday the 13th franchise. And then the same with everybody else. The only exception is we also have Corey Feldman in it. And he is actually playing a character. And most of you will know that he was in part 4 and 5.
Right.
But the reason he's playing a character is because he's playing something that is not him. He's playing a kind of this sleazeball producer. And that clearly doesn't fit him. So.
Yeah. Now, so the trailers that I've seen online look phenomenal, and I am so excited.
Thank you.
When is this Those coming out?
Those are actually teasers. I can give you our official trailer because we're about to launch it.
Okay.
The official trailer will have a couple of images from the teaser, but it's completely new and different, and I'd be more than happy to send you a link.
Absolutely, and I'll post that up on our Facebook page for the listeners to go take a look at, because the teasers have been fun.
We're not quite ready for that, but if you would, right after we release it, that would be so
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, I want to kind of step back in time a little bit and kind of look a little bit about across your career, because you have quite a long career, and I know you mentioned not only do you play a lot of different roles on camera, but on your bio on IMDb, you've been a journalist, a writer, an editor, a filmmaker, a teacher, a Playboy bunny at one point. Mm-hmm. How did you transition to this many roles in your personal career, in your life? And what's a driving factor to do that much?
I think because, one, I enjoy variety. I like to wake up and do the same thing every day. And if you'll notice that each of those careers that I've done, they all involve variety. When I'm writing for it, I wrote for the Dallas Morning News and the Fort Worth Star Telegram, every day you're meeting new people, writing about new people, telling about some new event that's going on, and you're going places and experiencing the event and then writing about it. So everything has to do with variety. Filmmaking, each role is different. Making each new film you make is different. And it teaches you something new. As a teacher, believe it or not, I'm sure there's a way that you could do it where it didn't feel very creative and stuff, but that's not how I did it. Every day was a new adventure that we took on in trying to find new ways to teach the kids to understand.
That's pretty incredible. Now, going back in the 80s, I noticed, you know, I'm a big fan of like all things 80s, and I've seen about every movie coming and going. But you were in Innocent Prey. You were also an Avenging Angel, and I haven't seen those in years, but I've seen them. And that was before you got the role as Tina in the Friday the 13th New Beginning.
Right.
How did those roles come about, and what was the experience like back then versus now?
I don't really know too much about auditioning now, except from a director's point of view. So much of it is now via video, where people self-videotape themselves, and that's a huge difference. I personally am glad that I was acting at the time that I did, even though in some ways it was more expensive then, because you had to keep making new headshots and printing them out. Now you're sending them digitally, and that, while you still have to get the shots made, it saves a lot of money in what you're not, having to shell out in, photos and bios and you know, mailings and that sort of thing. But basically you get, still now what's the same is everybody gets an agent, and that agent will get sides from the studios or independents, and it'll say, this is the character and this is what they're like. This is what we're looking for in look and in attitude and that sort of thing. And here's, you know, two or three pages, and then the agent will then look through his or her roster, figure out who fits, and send them out. In the case of Friday the 13th, that was the largest audition I'd been to. Not necessarily the, well, I mean, I like when I went out on Mystic Pizza, that I actually was down to the last three. It was Julia Roberts, myself, and one other person. They ended up going with Julia Roberts, which I don't have any qualms with that. That was an awesome choice. But it was more of, I went in as an individual, chatted, visited, and did the audition. With Friday the 13th, it was a little more like a cattle call. There were just lines and lines of people, and you went through the line and put down your photo, and you talked briefly, and then you were selected as to whether or not you would audition. Now, my agent had already said, I'm sending her out for Tina, and that's the only role that I ever read for. But I read three times for that role, once for the casting director, then she brought me in to read for Danny Steinman, the director, and then Danny basically told me that I was who he wanted, but he wanted the producer to see me. And then I went and saw him and auditioned for him as well. And then I got the role.
And you know, having the last name Voorhees is quite cool when you're going out for right? Friday the 13th role. And I thought, how ironic when I first saw that. And I saw there's a girl.
Name has been a part of my family for, let's see, since at least the 1300s.
Well, that's really cool. You probably have a very long, fun family history to keep up with. I did want to ask you, there was a movie you were in called Appointment with Fear, and you played the part of Ruth. Mm-hmm. At what point during your career did you kind of get that reputation as a scream queen?
You know, I really felt like I got it after, actually several years after Friday the 13th. Came out as the fan base built. But I guess fans would have to tell you more. I don't know if it was that same year, maybe it was for fans, but I didn't really get a chance to know fans until the internet and I started going to conventions. So they would probably be the best ones to ask. When did they think? You know, those that saw it back in the 80s. Them, was I a scream queen at the moment they saw Friday the 13th Part 5, or was it several years later after, you know, that reputation and Friday the 13th continued to build in popularity?
No. Well, no, one thing I thought was just so cool about it when I was kind of doing some research, a few years ago, I wrote a book on the 80s, and I broke it out in like movies and films and stuff like that, just a fun book, like for trivia, right? And at that point, I didn't realize this, but there were so many iconic shows that you actually appeared in. One of my very favorites, and I don't know if anybody will remember this show, it came on right after the A-Team, which was a hit, but called Riptide. Yes. Back in the 80s. I loved that show. You were on that, and then you were also on Dallas.
Right.
Are things very different from TV to movies?
There are quite a lot of differences. One of my favorite shows, though, is Riptide, because I got to do some comedy for that show. It definitely has a feeling for that moment of being a bit of a rom-com. And so that one was a lot of fun for me. I just like doing comedy. It was a lot of fun. Now, I love the blood and gore, too. That's a lot of fun. But of the two the television shows. I also did Days of Our Lives. And then for Dallas, that was really good too, because that kind of really started me out. It was my training ground for learning how to be on a film set, what the things you're supposed to do. And I didn't just go on there and do a line and leave. I took on a job of stand-in. And so I was a stand-in for all the Burnetts, like Victoria Principal and Linda Gray and wow. everybody. And so that really worked out super well, because once I could sit there and watch all day the inner workings of making a movie. And, you know, people are pretty nice on a film set. If you ask and you're polite to them and everything, they'll share their knowledge and help you out. And so I learned a lot on that set.
That is incredibly cool. Now, you said you do like comedy. Just not maybe a handful of years ago, you did a project called Billy Shakespeare. Can you tell folks right. a little bit about that? Because I thought that was incredibly interesting when you started doing that.
That is a total spoof, and it is a what-if comedy. What if Shakespeare never existed until now in Hollywood? How did Hollywood respond to him? And apparently they thought he was really wordy, but there's a whole lot of happenings that went on. Where I took historical aspects of Shakespeare, and I put them into a modern-day context. I wanted to have some of this Shakespearean language in it because it's so beautiful. But the way I made it happen is to make him obsessed with the Elizabethan period. And so he would pepper his language with that type of speech and dialogue.
Yeah, and I had just like one fun question on myself from me I wanted to ask, because I know some of the listeners that knew that you were coming on had given me some questions to ask. Just to satisfy my own curiosity, how did you become a Playboy bunny?
That was just another one. I just went in and I interviewed for it. And I was hired the same day. Then you have to go through bunny training. And you learn how to do the bunny dip and all those sort of things. And there's a lot of rules about, you know, the do's and don'ts in the Playboy Club, because you're representing, you know, an American iconic image of the Playboy.
And it was probably at its peak during that era in the 80s.
It was right at the very, very, right at in the 80s. At the end of 79 to, like, I think it was through 81.
Okay.
Funny.
Well, that's incredibly interesting. Now, in the horror genre, we're finally starting to see a very significant rise in the number of women writers and filmmakers that are impacting right. the genre. And I've actually had a couple of women filmmakers on prior to talk about their experiences and what they've experienced. How is it, do you think it's being perceived by the general public, and What are your thoughts on finally seeing a significant number of women filmmakers and creators in this genre?
Right. Well, I think it's wonderful. You know, I try not to worry too much about that, because if I were to sit there and wait for basically the boys to say I get a job or I'll be hired to do this or that, I actually have taken my signals from the boys, which is I make my own films. I don't wait for somebody to hire me to do a film. Now, that doesn't mean that I would be delighted to work as a director for other horror films, but I'm not going to spend my time trying to push that. Instead, I'm going to spend my time making my own and hiring both the boys and the girls to work for me.
Just my own personal opinion on it, from talking to folks like Jennifer Nangle, who's in LA and doing a lot of independent stuff too, and with what you're doing and what a lot of women have been doing, it's really changed somewhat the intensity and a perspective on horror, which I think is mm-hmm. really kind of like, if you wanted a well-rounded genre, for lack of a better term, it's really adding to it. And I'm excited to see where things go, especially with independent film over the right. next few years, because I mean, we've seen some of, hate to say it, but the influence of Hollywood and big budget. I mean, if it's not a kid movie or, you know, Fast and Furious or something like that, or big blockbuster,
right.
you're not really seeing the attention, and it's really gone to independent film, places like Netflix and Apple and Amazon and things like what you're doing. It's really exciting. I did want to ask, are you, when this is all done and released, are you going to release anything like behind the scenes footages
of any of this? Eventually, a lot's just going to be depending on how well the fans receive it. Is it financially smart of us to go ahead and do it behind the scenes? We have the footage for it, but of course, you know, it takes quite a bit of money to make it come to life, because you not only have to do the editing, but then you have to do sound design and, you know, the score for underneath. So it gets pretty expensive. So if fans respond well and it looks like something that makes a lot of sense to do, we'll absolutely do it.
Oh, I certainly hope they respond well. It's breathing a new life into one of the greatest franchises in you know, movie history in the modern era. So I'm excited about it. Hey, thank you so much. You're welcome to come back on anytime. Any other future projects you're working on, I'd love to certainly help support that too.
I really appreciate you. Thank you so much.
When can folks expect to see this, 13 Fanboy?
We come out October 22nd. We'll be in select theaters across the United States, as well as on about every VOD platform and pay-per-view out there. And then, of course, it'll eventually go to secondary markets, like DVDs and Blu-rays and streaming services and stuff. But initially, that's where we're kicking off.
All right. And I'm certainly looking forward to any kind of merchandise you guys have come along with, the two t-shirts, hats.
We have a shop. If you enter spread shirt 13 fanboy, spread shirt 13 fanboy, we have tons of merchandise there.
Well, I'm going to go ahead and put that website up on the Facebook page. And hopefully some people will check that out. Deborah Voorhees, thanks again for coming by the Gonzo Chronicles. You're welcome back anytime. I've been a big fan, so I've been looking forward to this. So thanks so much.
Thank you. Take care.
Take care.